thanks for listening and for being a part of Jason Q's Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends radio show. What a time it is to be alive. So much is happening out there in the big wide world. We are going to have Michael O'Neill, the leader of the IMOP party, on the show very, very soon. Delighted to have Michael back on the show. What a true gentleman and an organizer in the freedom movement. He's doing amazing work out there, and I love the fact that we can work together and see how far we can take this. And we're going to have a good discussion about the election before and what the freedom movement will do to consolidate. Now, this is the opening monologue of my show, and I think it's very important to bring you the news of the day, the way that I see it and the way that we are seeing it out there. And I want to be able to take you from Australia around the world and pick up on some ideas that we may not be seeing. Now, one of the big things that happened yesterday that was brought to my attention after the show was that, in actual fact, my name ended up on a ballot. Well, it was on a ballot because I was a candidate, but the ballots from the electorate of Paterson were found 150 kilometres away in a garbage bin in Port Macquarie. And this was actually brought to the attention of Ben Fordham on News 2GB Radio in Sydney. He put it up there on his website before promptly taking it down when the AEC came out and decided that it wasn't much to worry about, that some of the ballots looked like they were photocopies amongst some that were actually genuine. And what was strange, of course, was that there were some serial numbers on the top. Now, when you rip off a ballot paper to hand it out there in an election, it's clean. You don't have the serial numbers across the top, which kind of feels like that perhaps the pad was actually stolen. But these ballots were handed out, which I find kind of strange, and they're filled out. Now, I was number 6 of 7 on the list, so it wasn't like they were my votes. I'm not talking about that, I'm not complaining about that at all. But what we are worried about is the fact that you can have actual ballots in Australia in compulsory voting that are finding their way into garbage bins a month after an election and still haven't been destroyed. Thanks, Alana. Nothing to see here. Very, very true. Now, that's just one of the big stories that that have come up. And when we get the appropriate evidence to come out there and talk about it a bit more, we will. But that's something that we need to talk about. Now, there's many, many other things that are going on here. And I can go international, or I can go local. I can talk COVID, or I can talk something else. And I might actually go a different way here in our monologue. What I want to read to you is a story that came out on Just the News. Current and former CIA, Google, Pfizer leaders meet to secretly tackle disinformation. What am I talking about? World and business leaders met in Washington, D.C. for the past few days for informal discussions about geopolitical realignments, Russia, Ukraine, disruption of the global financial system, post-pandemic health and disinformation, among other subjects, are all off the record. The annual invite-only Bilderberg meeting, thank you very much for those paying attention, which traces its roots to a post-war concern about insufficient cross-Atlantic cooperation, publishes a list of its participants and discussion topics, but bans reporting journalists from attending to encourage the highest level of openness and dialogue, read secrecy. Its steering committee, which funds the meetings, includes failed Georgia gubernatorial Democratic candidate Stacey Abrams. She thought she was going to be the VP, but Kamala got that job. World Economic Forum president, say no more, Borge Brend, and former CEO of Google, Eric Schmidt, but also venture capitalist and early Facebook investor Peter Thiel, a strong supporter, strangely, of President Trump. This year's meeting include current and former CIA directors, well, say no more, William Burns and David Petraeus, Schmidt, Thiel, Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla, of course, and Canada's Deputy PM, Chrystia Freeland, who ordered the freezing of Freedom Convoy supporters' bank accounts. Are you paying attention? Reams of other US and European government officials also attended, including Senator Kristen Sinema, Democrat from Arizona, Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, Transport Secretary Adewale Adeyemo, National Secretary Counsel Jake Sullivan, didn't he just get COVID, Assistant Secretary of Defense Celeste Wallander, veteran diplomat Henry Kissinger, say no more. Man's nearly 100. NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg, European Commission Vice President Margarita Schinnes, and Prime Ministers Sanna Marin of Finland and Mark Rutte of the Netherlands. Participants are banned from attributing the information they receive at the meeting to specific participants or their affiliations, known as the Chatham House Rules. Activist group Reclaim the Net highlighted some of the attendees' topics and the nature of the meeting Saturday. The meeting's FAQ page brushes off criticism it has faced as the product of anti-globalism protests and various conspiracy theorists, of course, who have expressed wild allegations about the purpose of the gatherings, nothing to see here, and spread them online in social media groups. Well, how about that? Now, just to put a little bit more international spin before we go local, and I'm going to introduce Michael O'Neill very, very soon. Now, for those of you who are catching this live introduction on YouTube and Facebook, please go to tntradio.live for the rest of the show. Michael will be there. Yeah, check it out. You can download it on the app. You can go to the various different platforms such as Rumble and YouTube and stream TNT Radio. You'll see it there on the screen. There's the logo. Just going to read you this quick one here. Russian Secretary Council Chair Nikolai Petrushev, in a meeting on June 17 with the Collective Security Treaty Organization, made some rather significant remarks pertaining to the U.S. biological network in Ukraine. Who's listening? During the operation, our suspicions were confirmed that Ukraine became a base for Washington's military biological program. Such U.S. projects require particular attention of the civilized world because the Americans were the only ones who didn't join the protocol on a mutual control within the framework of the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention. The accumulation of new facts on criminal breaches of international laws by the US and Ukraine continues on a persistent basis. Russia's special military operation also defended the Donbas population from genocide by the Kiev regime, performing the demilitarization and denazification of Ukraine and prosecuting war criminals responsible for brutal crimes against civilians. Now, what Petrushev said isn't anything new to us who have been paying attention, but it does confirm that these extremely volatile and consequential accusations are not going to simply go away. The global US biological network is the main focus of all Russian foreign policy. It appears Russia are going all in and are quite literally willing to die on this hill. That gives you a broad spectrum of what's going on. I'm going to end this broadcast because when Michael comes on, I can't compare the audio. Got to go to the radio to listen to what I hope to see over there. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Opinions fact-checked.
If we don't speak up now, nothing's going to change.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. What a time it is to be alive, and what a time it is to have Michael O'Neill with me from the Informed Medical Options Party. Welcome, Michael.
Hello, Jason. Pleased to be here, mate.
Look, it's terrific to have you back on, and it's been such a great thrill to work alongside you in the Freedom Party movement, working together, comparing notes, and trying to work out how we can make not only Australia a better place, but the world. It's a great, great thrill to have you back on the show. How are you feeling after that onslaught of what was not just weeks' worth of work? This was months, probably years' worth of work for you.
Well, it was a... It was a grueling, particularly the last couple of months. It was very difficult. It was. I enjoyed it. I kept the goal in sight, what we were looking for. Every day I woke up, we put one step in front of another and just went ahead to do the tasks of the day. And it was a tad disappointing, to say the least, when we saw the results. But nevertheless, we're still in the game. We're still here. The issues haven't abated. And we're still in the fight.
Yeah, well said, Michael. You said something to me at one of the events that we attended along the way, and you may have even said it to me twice along the campaign trail, and it was something that spoke to me volumes about what it takes to become a political candidate. And you've gone obviously a step further by setting up this magnificent party that you've done and got it growing and assembled an amazing array of talented candidates and volunteers behind the scenes. But you said to me, look, you spend a lot of money in a campaign, and you know you could probably go and spend that on a holiday, but you have a holiday and you come home, and what have you got to show for it? And it really put it into perspective for me that when you do put your hand up and you have to outlay a lot of your own time and money, that you're doing it for a greater good. And whilst you might go on a holiday and enjoy yourself, what have you got to show if you come back to a world that's not like the one that you left? And that really made it easier for me to realize it. So thank you for saying that. Yeah. But it's something that I think that should be reflected to a wider audience of other people that might be thinking, well, maybe I should have had a go and become a candidate in the last election, but surely there's a lot more elections to come, and you'll be fielding candidates in the state elections too, won't you?
That's correct. We will be fielding candidates in the New South Wales state election. Not the Victorian. We are not registered for Victoria, and we have made a decision that we will not. We're going to support the other freedom parties down there. We're going to direct our members to support them. There's the Health Australia Party that is quite closely aligned to us. They're having a go. But look, there's all the other parties as well, and of course UAP will be down there, One Nation. Liberal Democrats, Great Australia Party, possibly the Australian Federation Party. So there's quite a good field, and we'll take a more of a support base. But back in New South Wales, and I think the election's on the 25th of March next year, 2023, we will be fielding candidates here. And this is an area we really want to concentrate on. It's an enormous job to run and go through an election campaign, one as a candidate, and two as I'm the president of the party as well. So it's it basically, from the moment you wake up to when you go to bed, it just consumes you, and which is fine. And because there's, you know, we all are consumed with something. So what are we consumed with? Is our life consumed with having a good time? Is our life consumed with going to the pub or seeing our mates or going on holidays? So I would like my life to be consumed with something that is noble, is right, that's patriotic, and I consider to be brave. And in fact, for all the candidates that ran, whether they, yourself, Jason, and other candidates from freedom parties, and of course our candidates, I've told them many times, they are truly brave, and they are patriots of the first order, and they can hold their head high. And as they look back on their life, if this is the only time or any time they run, they can realise that they actually stepped out of a comfort zone and were brave enough to take a stand to make a difference to in our great country, and to, you know, to make our country and our world a better place. And hats off to them. Well done.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. You know, there's something very, very special about people that that put their hand up, remove the ego from the situation, knowing that they're probably not in necessarily the best shape to be able to win, and that's a big deal. But to be able to just go and compete, it's a big deal, and I'd like people to understand that. That this is something that that they need to be able to just get out there and have a go, and it doesn't matter that you're not going to win, right? You've just got to get out there, and who knows what's going to happen, because it's a building process.
That's correct, and you're part of the solution and not part of the problem, and that's very important to understand that's your position. This weekend we'll be conducting a down in Sydney at a major hotel. We'll be having our conference, where everyone will come from, all our members will come from all over Australia, and we'll be presenting our candidates. Even though they may not have won a seat at the election, we're going to present them with a certificate or things of recognition of what they've done. We want them to feel that they've really done something good, and, you know, and we do honour them. We take our hats off to them. And, of course, if anyone else is listening out there that think, I'd like to be a candidate, if you've got fire in your bones and you're prepared to put your time, and yes, you'll have to put money towards it, and you passionately believe that Australia is heading in a course that's foreign and hostile to the values that it was federated on, then you need to consider running as a candidate for a Freedom Party, the Informed Medical Options Party, or any other Freedom Party.
Isn't it amazing, Michael, that we can speak like this in a collective basis representing other parties? I mean, obviously we join our own for the various different reasons that we do, but it's the idea that we can realise that we're all on the same page here, and that in politics, unfortunately, the truth is that the enemy of your enemy is your friend. And this is a sort of a nice way of explaining it, or perhaps the dirty way of explaining it, really, is that you realise what the true opposition is, and in our case, it's been the establishment parties that have gone down the COVID pathway unfortunately is the line in the sand that's exposed everyone for what's actually going on, and here we become, and it's just become the normal thing now that all these parties are here. However, there will come a time when the freedom movement will mature and will consolidate to some point. Not sure when that is, but I thought that would be a valid conversation that we would likely be able to have today on the show, because there's certainly we've got to do a bit of a post-mortem on the election, work out what we did right, but also what we did wrong, and what it may well be that's going to bring us all together and to improve that vote to affect change. I don't know if it's a case of more of a pendulum swinging, or whether it's something else that's going to happen that's going to be able to bring people across. But one would have to think that the sheer weight of what we're seeing in terms of catastrophic loss of young people turning up in the news every single day may well be the trigger. We're seeing athletes dropping like flies today. I don't know if you saw this one, Michael, but an athlete was in the swimming in the FINA Championships and was in the artistic event and fell to the bottom of the swimming pool and had passed out, and her coach had to jump in and pull her out of the water. This was reported on Channel 9 Wide World of Sports. It's astonishing.
It's not normal. We are living in an abnormal society where they're trying to normalise the abnormal. And unfortunately, because they have a complicit media, they are able to pull this off to most of the people. But we, I'm sure you and many of your listeners and I absolutely, our head's not in the sand. Our eyes are wide open. We understand cause and effect. And what is actually happening is a direct result of a pharmaceutical intervention, a needless pharmaceutical intervention, or should I say an experimental intervention that is having serious consequences in our society, and particularly of those that exert themselves more than the mainstream, the general run of the people. So we have a huge problem. Of course, they come up with all sorts of names with it for the general population who are listless, tired, and can't seem to get their life together after they're participating in the vaccine, the program. They call that long COVID. And, you know, any excuse will do except the truth. You can come up with any, you know, ridiculous scenario except the truth. The truth is unsatisfactory in this. It's untouchable. It's sacrosanct. It's blasphemy to speak against it. So what a surreal situation. I'm currently driving my wife's car, and I'm actually sitting in the car right now. And every time you turn it on, somehow I haven't been able to work out, it automatically goes to the radio. So Radio National is tuned in. And I've been listening to these little bits of segments every time I start the car for a few minutes, and sometimes I hold on a little bit longer, but I'm just always astounded at the sheer volume of propaganda that's being spewed out from our national broadcaster, our taxpayer-funded national broadcaster. There is obviously a very strong leaning to the left and to the current propaganda position, and all these things have to be addressed. Our political leaders are too weak to say and demand that our national broadcaster gives fair balance. In other words, they just become completely unbiased, report on the news. And if they have a commentary on one subject, they should have equal time for the opposite view, regardless if that's a minority position or not. They do it with other things. They certainly do it with the environment. They certainly do it with, gay issues. But on this issue, they ignore all fair balance and they will say, oh, well, it's just a minority view, and think that that gets them off the hook. It does not, because they don't practice that in other areas. So they're inconsistent. So I have a real bugbear about the ABC. I believe it's a betrayal of our taxpayer dollar. Ida Buttrose needs to be instantly removed. Anyway, I might stop there. I think I've talked about this on your show before.
I'll make this point, Michael, that I think that one of the ways that the freedom movement consolidates, and we chatted about this earlier when I spoke to you today, was that the freedom movement might collectively have to join some issues together and not just about freedom. But I think that there's an argument for rejecting the idea of compulsory voting in this country, at least until the ABC covers all candidates equally and fairly in an election campaign.
Very good point, Jason.
And the schools start teaching politics. Why have compulsory voting if the general public has to go out and educate themselves and most are disinterested because of the behaviour of politics, the idea that it's Labour versus Liberal and that's all it ever is, and it's literally just, you know, changing deck chairs on the Titanic, really, because nothing really changes. And here the perfect example from my point of view with the United Australia Party was we introduced two magnificent policies. One was the capping of interest rates for 5 years at 3%, which could have been done to protect people in their homes. And already, if that policy had come about, people would already be seeing the spoils of that, given that home loan interest rates have already risen 0.75% officially, and most people have gone up 0.8, 0.9 on their pre-election interest rates. And the other big policy was the iron ore export license of 15% that would have gone on top, that would have helped pay down that debt, reduced the pressure on inflation, which would have reduced the pressure on interest rates having to go up in the first place. And so there's a lot that we can talk about in all of that. We're going to take a quick break, Michael. When we come back, I'm going to introduce a little piece that's going to give people a little bit of encouragement, the unvaccinated, because it's one thing to go out there and fight, 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 but we need a little bit of good news. And I'm going to read something from a vaccinated Australian writer. It's an opinion piece, but it's certainly going to give people a lot of strength and encouragement, knowing that you backed yourself and you were right, and we are in here to fight for a lot more than just survival at this point. And there is a happy way to get out of this at the end. We need to consolidate, but it's a big deal. In the meantime, please don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Michael Parker on TNT Radio.
You know, in this show, we talk a lot about climate science, climate hoax. Do we have a climate crisis? Are we in a climate catastrophe? And we talk often to geologists, people who are involved with the dynamics of the planet itself, whether it be plate tectonics. We've talked to people who study the cycles of the sun, et cetera, but we really haven't had a meteorologist on. So Joe Bastardi, who's our guest in this hour, he has a book called The Weaponization of Weather in the Phony Climate War. Joe, welcome to the show.
One of the problems Yellowstone is having, along with those areas, it's been much colder and wetter than normal this year. You wouldn't know that now, would you? That because all you're going to hear about is the hysteria from what I have labeled the meteorology misinformation media.
Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
We need a recalibration of government. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. I have Michael O'Neill with me today, the leader of the IMOP party. I'm just going to read off a couple of things here. Noah on Twitter tweeted, "Remember, if someone young and healthy dies unexpectedly, it is improper to ask about their vaccination status. That question is only for important occasions like entry into restaurants." Now, in a different piece, an opinion piece from a vaccinated Australian writer. This one will take a little bit longer. "If COVID was a battlefield, it would still be warm with the bodies of the unvaccinated. Thankfully, the mandates are letting up and both sides of the war stumble back to the new normal. The unvaccinated are the heroes of the last 2 years as they allowed us to have all a control group in the great experiment and highlight the shortcoming of the COVID vaccines. The unvaccinated carry many battle scars and injuries as they are the people we tried to mentally break, yet no one wants to talk about what we did to them and what they forced the science to unveil. We knew that the waning immunity of the fully vaccinated had the same risk profile as others within society as the minority of the unvaccinated, yet we marked them for special persecution. You see, we said they had not done the right thing for the greater good by handing their bodies and medical autonomy over to the state. Many of the so-called health experts and political leaders in Australia admitted the goal was to make life almost unlivable for the unvaccinated, which was multiplied many times by the collective mob with the fight taken into workplaces, friendships, and family gatherings. Today, the hard truth is none of it was justified as we took a quick slide from righteousness to absolute cruelty. We might lay the blame on our leaders and health experts for the push, but each individual within society must be held accountable for stepping into the well-laid-out trap. We did this knowing full well that principled opposition is priceless when it comes to what goes on inside our bodies, and we let ourselves be tricked into believing that going into another ineffective lockdown would be the fault of the unvaccinated and not the fault of the toxic policy of ineffective vaccines. We took pleasure in scapegoating the unvaccinated because after months of engineered lockdowns by political leaders, blinded by power, having someone to blame and to burn at the stake felt good. We believed we had logic, love, and truth on our side, so it was easy to wish death upon the unvaccinated. Those of us who ridiculed and mocked the non-compliant did it because we were embarrassed by their courage and principles and didn't think the unvaccinated would make it through unbroken, and we turned the holdouts into punching bags. Lambie, Carr, Chant, Andrews, McGowan, Gunner, and the others. A cast of hundreds in prominent roles need to be held to account for vilifying the unvaccinated in public and fueling angry social media mobs. The mobs, the masked Nazis, the vaccine disciples have been embarrassed by betting against the unvaccinated because mandates only had the power we gave them. It was not compliance that ended domination by big pharma companies, Bill Gates and his many organizations and the World Economic Forum. It was thanks to the people we tried to embarrass, ridicule, mock and tear down. We should all try and find some inner gratitude for the unvaccinated as we took the bait by hating them because their perseverance and courage bought us the time to see we were wrong. So if the mandates ever return for COVID or any other disease or virus, hopefully more of us will be awakened and see the rising authoritarianism, and that has no concern for our well-being and is more about power and control. The war on the unvaccinated was lost, and we should all be very thankful for that." Now, that is from an anonymous writer on Telegram. Michael, how do you feel now?
Yes, I've actually read that article, and I thought it was extremely well written and really succinctly described what has actually happened. And it is vindication for the cause. And I think that, you know, we can feel pleased that we we took our stand for on principles of right, and we maintained our integrity and our position, and it's been vindicated. It's been a great embarrassment. Of course, they don't admit it just yet, but history will show that it was a time of extreme madness and folly at the expense of many people. There's far more people died as a repercussions and as a result of the lockdowns than ever died because of COVID and vaccine injuries taking it to another new level as well.
Absolutely it is. And this is the great paradox of this particular situation in history, is that we got into this event because we were protecting the elderly, which was a fallacy, because, I mean, we've already proven now that the death of COVID average age is the same as the life expectancy anyway.
That's so right.
We've gained absolutely nothing and yet put everyone at risk. And unfortunately, those that trust authority have just walked into the trap, haven't they?
We made the elderly's life hell. That's what they did. They made their last hours hell, whether they lived 1 year, 2 years. My sister, who worked in aged care until she was eventually dismissed because she wouldn't take the vaccine. Well, she actually took two vaccines. She wouldn't take the third. And she said that it was heartbreaking to watch people cope with the absence of their loved ones. Their smiling daughter and children, or the grandchildren coming in and running around, all that disappeared in the quest to protect the vulnerable. Protect the vulnerable, they hurt the vulnerable. They needlessly hurt and inflicted very cruel torture on their last days in life. It is a great shame to Australia, and it should be never forgotten any more than we forget the Holocaust the Germans inflicted on millions during the Second World War.
And you're speaking from the idea that this is what they were doing, all of this to protect the elderly, and they made.
I know.
It was just
the
young,
unbelievably stupid. They were not protecting the elderly. They don't care about the elderly. Honestly, they really don't care. Because if they cared, they would give 2 minutes of thought to it and realize how much they were hurting. It was, they were on a mantra to deliver their agenda, which was hold everyone down till we get the great savior, the glowing savior that will come and save us all, the vaccine. Unbelievable. It's, so a lot of very wealthy people became a lot more wealthy at our expense, lest we forget.
Yeah, well said, Michael. I don't know if you saw the news this week, but in Israel, the COVID cases have gone back over 10,000 a day in a country that has led the way on vaccine. Mm-hmm. They have an exclusive agreement with Pfizer, with Albert Bourla's company, who Mr. Bourla himself comes out today with his big virtue signaling, and he says that now all profits made out of Russia will be donated to Ukraine. I mean, for me, that's just an announcement that obviously, even though if you didn't know that he was part of this great deep state, one-sided affair that's moving and marching us straight into globalism, there he was being interviewed by World Economic Forum's Klaus Schwab recently, and they're talking about how great they all are, and it's very, very clear where we're going. In Israel, there's a country of around about 6 million people. They've had 4.26 million COVID cases to date. That means that more than two-thirds of that country has had COVID, despite them up to their fourth jab. And as we know, they introduced the vaccine passport. Now, interestingly, and I do comparisons on this between Israel and Palestine, and I'll jump to that right now for everyone just to give you a comparison. So Palestine, obviously, right next door, we can go and check those numbers for you, and you'll be absolutely shocked by how well Palestine's going by comparison. This is what is extraordinary. So in Palestine, they've got let me give you the population numbers in a moment, but they're around about 60% of the population of Israel. They've had 583,000 cases, half the deaths. So they've had 80% less cases in Palestine.
Yes.
Right now, the cases per day in Palestine are down to 400. and Israel's at 10,000. I mean, you can't think that this can be anything but the vaccine that's doing this. It's either weakened the immune systems or it's causing it. And this is the conversation that no one wants to have. What's your take on that one?
Yes, it's very interesting. There's a line in the sand, and what's the differentiating thing? It's vaccine or massive vaccine or little or much less vaccine. And we see this also, if I'd like to swing over to, you know, you've got the United States, a large country, and I'm going to, even the original childhood vaccines, you have a group of Americans that live side by side their neighbours where they have almost zero autism, almost zero. It's called the Amish because they do not take any, they don't even take the childhood vaccines. They have far superior and healthier children than mainstream Americans living there. Their only properties are separated by a fence. And what's the difference? It's vaccines. Vaccine is not the savior of the world. It's the savior of some very wealthy people's bank accounts. And it is a diabolical intrusion into our bodies that are crying out just to heal us. And general sickness and many of these sicknesses that we see now as, you know, pandemics and catastrophic are just passages of something we go through in life. And of course, a flu, a cold can turn into pneumonia and always take out an elderly person. It's just how people die. I'm 65 years old. I expect when I'm maybe 85 that's probably be the event that'll trigger me into the next world. But now all of a sudden we've tried to legislate immortality on our society. Mm. We don't have it. We always get sick. It's just a part of life. And what we've done, we've caused this massive disruption in society. Everything in our society is disrupted. You go to restaurants, there's not enough staff. The farmers haven't got enough staff. The hospitals haven't got staff. The schools haven't got staff. We've got people sitting around. They've been sacked, and it's caused this massive disruption for no logical, rational reason whatsoever. So we've and now they're talking food shortages. How long is that going to go on for? Mm. Because they intervened. They got this pandemic, but what they did, they removed democracy. I always say you take the Dem, signifying democracy, out of pandemic, and all you have left is panic. And we've just instituted the great panic of 2 years. And we can't introduce the great panic and think we can just slide back into our old life. No. We have unprecedented debt. We have people, you know, displaced mentally, physically, and in every way possible. Financially, we're going to reap the results of it. We're going to see financial hurt. We're going to see the this housing bubble is going to burst. We are in for a rough ride coming up, and it's all engineered by the government actions during the so-called pandemic, which I call the panic.
Mm. Yeah, it's exactly right, isn't it, that this is more than, I mean, COVID was not here by accident, that's for certain, and we're still sitting here, and that whole pursuit to find out the truth behind the origins of COVID has been entirely dropped, which in its own is the ultimate giveaway, and that just blows my mind. Now, just to give you another comparison whilst we're just circling back to this COVID business, when I go in and research Israel-Palestine, obviously look at the Australian statistics, one country I've had my eye firmly on for the whole time was Nigeria. And the reason that I look at Nigeria is that it's the biggest malaria country in the world in terms of cases per annum. And it's also a very, very large country, over 200 million people. And when I started watching them, Nigeria versus Australia versus Israel, they're all roughly around about the same amount of cases, a couple of hundred thousand when I sort of looked at it. Well, since January 31 this year, There was 253,000 cases of COVID in Nigeria. Today, they're sitting at 256,711 cases. It's gone up 3,500 since January 31 of this year. I just gave you the stats. Israel's got 10,000 a day. Australia's somewhere near that number in the thousands per day. And Nigeria's had 3,500 in February, March, April, May in nearly five months. How's this one for you? The last death in of COVID cases in Nigeria was June 9. Before that was April 16, and before that was February 17. They've had three deaths to COVID since February 17, 2022, and their vaccination rate in that country, Michael, is 5%. 5% of people. And if that doesn't tell you what the problem is, nothing will. I've had plenty of debates with it, including with Senator Jared Rennick, who insists that he doesn't think that the stats might necessarily be as clean as they are. But the main thing that they've got in Nigeria, of course, is that they take anti-malarials. They don't take ivermectin. They don't take hydroxychloroquine. But clearly the anti-malarial drugs have got some sort of effect on keeping this virus at bay. So there's certainly something to be said for all of what's going on here. And it's a tough life, isn't it, when this is what we've got to play for, to be able to try and get to the truth of the matter. And it's heartbreaking nonetheless. Now, what I'd like to be able to do, Michael, is talk to you in the next segment about some of the ideas moving forward in the party that you lead, in terms of being able to come to a broader spectrum, because this must be something that that your party members and candidates would be saying to you: how do we become more relevant, more popular? And so it's one thing to fight just on medical situations, but also on the idea of combining forces in terms of having economic policy, obviously something to do with mandates. I think you had the best policy in the country on decoupling from the World Health Organization. That's crucial. And I want to be able to explore that a little bit more when we come back from the break. In the meantime, don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.
It has come to this. Heatwave lockdowns are now a thing.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Due to a heat wave, regions in France are now banning outdoor gatherings and concerts until officials declare the heat wave over. You thought the COVID lockdowns were an anomaly? Welcome to the heat wave lockdowns. Officials in France banned people from attending concerts, gatherings, and events due to the safety concerns over the heat wave. You are no longer allowed to make this decision for yourself. Unelected government bureaucrats now determine what you can and can't do outside in the summer. In one of the biggest ironies, the annual resistance celebrations are now banned until officials declare the heat wave over. Expect a cold wave lockdown next, and climate lockdowns are already on the horizon. The wacky world in which we live. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
There is a special place in South Dakota, a place of hope, love, safety, and opportunity for Native American children. This place is St. Joseph's Indian School. Here, we preserve traditions, provide Lakota kids a safe place to learn, attend to the mind, body, heart, and spirit of every child in our care. To learn more, go to helplakotakids.org today.
For the news and talk you can't hear anywhere else, it's TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. Here's a meme I picked up earlier in the day. I feel bad for parents nowadays. You have to be able to explain the birds and the bees. The bees and the bees, the birds and the birds, the birds that used to be the bees that used to be birds, the birds that look like bees, plus bees that look like birds but still got a stinger. How about that one, Michael? This is the world we're living in.
It's a mad, mad, mad world, unfortunately. I mean, you couldn't have believed in my generation that we would be legitimizing such stupidity. And, you know, and the way they talk about it is if it's a deadly serious and we can't move forward as a society unless we embrace this this nonsense. And, you know, anyway, yeah.
Well, it's pretty, this pretty is wild. It. It's Yeah, it's heartbreaking, isn't it? Because it's not only that it's legitimizing, it's enforcing it. I mean, you've got no way around it. Now, in the break, we heard the story of heatwave lockdowns.
Yes, I'm fascinated by unbelievable. You know, they've got a taste for it. It's in there. They've tasted blood now. Their lockdowns, they've gone lockdown mad. They're just like hungry wolves going out for next blood.
Well, this is it, and it's all justified as the idea of under the guise of safety. I mean, come on now. We're going to lock down society because you might get too hot. I mean, goodness me, you can't put ice on your head. You can't, you know. I mean, what are they going to do? Ban cricket matches when it gets over 35 degrees when you're standing outside for 6 hours playing? I mean, where does this stop?
It's the extreme nanny state. We're one of the worst countries in the world for this, where we have actually given over control in the name of safety to the authorities, and it's as if the authorities can dictate what's the safest course for us. And who are these authorities? They're just public servants, oftentimes very mediocre, cautious people that have not done nothing adventurous in their life, that are full of fear, and we're dictated by their own insecurities and fear. It's a crazy world. I might have told you this before, Jason. Before COVID, I was well traveled. In fact, in 2 weeks, I'll be off in Germany and Europe, on business. But when you come back to Australia, you're struck with the extreme ridiculous nature of even our road rules, which are all about safety. We have beautiful highways where we go slow. I've just flown back from Melbourne this morning and sitting on 5 lane highways each way at 80 kilometers an hour and speed cameras hidden at every step. So we are truly, we got big problems in this country, major problems, and we've got to fight back. We can't allow these cautious people and other the greedy, money hungry people to dictate on our lives.
Well, that's it. It's the lack of control of not only bodily autonomy, but just the idea that you even have any notion of freedom left. Michael, what's from the election to where you're now headed, the trajectory, what are you seeing are some of the perhaps the additions as opposed to changes? There's not so much you might want to change, but you might want to add to it perhaps. Where are you personally thinking that the party might want to improve upon or add to as it moves into the next era of its life?
Well, one thing we've learned, we started out with our primary focus on the vaccine rollout, which we believe was disproportionate and it was discriminatory. And so that was our big focus. We believe that that was a real problem. And, of course, we were proved correct because COVID came along and then we realised the system was completely out of control. But we also realised that people... there are many other issues we have to deal with in society. And if we're going to be elected officials, then we're going to have to deal with everything along the way. We're going to have to deal with financial problems, environmental problems. We're going to have to deal with the social problems, trade problems, in every sphere. And so we are looking at everything now. And I do believe that we're quite balanced in our outlook. And we are not locked in just one in our dogma as well. So at the moment, like this coming weekend, I mentioned just previously, we will be meeting as a party for a 2-day event at a major hotel in Sydney. And we're coming from all over Australia, our candidates, our board and people of note in our party. And we're going to really look at our way forward. And as I've said to the party, and I am the president, I said that everything's on the table. Okay. We're going to put it all out there on the table. We can't just continue to, just stagnate in a position. If we're going to be a viable political party, we have to be progressive. We have to listen to what people want as well. This issue is very important to us, but there are many other important issues, and we'd like to embrace all those issues. If we're successful, we'll have to sit in Parliament and have a voice on these issues so people have a right to know what is our thinking on the different issues as a party. We're not a very heavy-handed party, I might say. We do give our our candidates, and we've told them this, they have a lot of latitude. They are, you know, if they're on the lower house reps, they're going to have to listen to their electorate very closely and fight for their electorate. In the Senate, of course, we're going to have a much have a broader view on every issue. But yes, Jason, we are looking at we want to really analyse where the party's at, where we're going, what needs to be changed. And as I said, everything's on the table, from our policies, from our name. But, of course, the things that we constituted and started on are still vitally important to us, and we're not in any way considering watering them down. We just want to embrace more and be a more broad-spectrum party as well.
Yeah, look, it's absolutely terrific, Michael. You've done absolutely everything right in the build-up so far, coming from an ideology to representing what the people were calling out for. And whether or not you win or lose, clearly there's a process to all this and it needs to evolve. It's not like we're just in the past where there was two political parties. We're now in a situation where there are many and they are making it more difficult, and we're meeting that task every single time. How do people actually go about joining your party? What would they do?
Well, you would go to our website, which is imoparty.com. Then you can sign up online. We have a very modest annual fee of $25 per member. Or if you're absolutely destitute, you can join as an associate member for nothing. We do have thousands of members, not as many as UAP, but we have a very dedicated membership. We are registered in New South Wales to contest the next election, which we will be, and I will most likely be contesting a seat in the upper house of the New South Wales Parliament. And looking, if that's successful, I'll be very happy to concentrate my efforts on New South Wales and ensuring good policy, and also being a voice to represent the concerns of the my fellow New South Welshman. Is that how you say it?
That certainly is. Now, if someone wanted to become a candidate, is there a process to do that? How would they go about that?
Yes, there is a candidate form on our website. You fill that out. We do have a process. Of course, the first step would probably be I would call or contact you within a week or so, as soon as I can fit it into my schedule. Then if that goes off all right and I have a list of questions where I'll review and just see if you're a fit. If I think that there's some legs in that, then we will go to a panel. That panel will be a number of people on our committee that will on a Zoom, and we will interview you. If you get through that, and then we will ask you to give us a written a more detailed written application, and then it would be presented to our executive committee with our recommendations. And if that all goes through, then we will endorse you to be a candidate for either a local seat or in the upper house.
Oh, there you go. So that makes sense. And on the last election, the federal election, how many candidates did you end up fielding in the lower house?
In the lower house, I think it was about 23. Yeah.
Yep. And in the upper house?
Yep. Well, now let me think. Let me just say this. We had at least two. We had three in Queensland, in every state in Australia, and in the ACT.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you fielded nearly 40 candidates in total. So you're certainly you're certainly not a micro party anymore, but you're coming from that level, but you're expanding and it's clearly resonating. And the types of people, Michael, that actually become candidates, what type of people? Is it just a bunch of doctors and lawyers, or is it a lot broader than that?
Oh, no, it's everyone. We had two barristers and our candidates. We had two we had three doctors. We had airline captain. So we had mums. We had professional business people. It was quite a broad spectrum of people. Usually at the first interview that I have with a person, we try to work out, are you a fit for us? And sometimes many of the people, and I like to let them know, look, this is going to cost you some money. This is going to be, there's quite a bit of effort. We need some passion. And probably at least half of them will drop out. Then they'll say, oh, I didn't think I, you know, and if we get that, that's all right. But we go through the process because at the end of the day, we want people that, that know how to, they're going to stand up before the people. They got to have a, they've got to know what they believe. They've got to feel confident to be able to speak and to meet people, fundraise, and to be a leader, because you're going to get volunteers around them and they'll be looking to that candidate to be their leader.
And that's the point, isn't it? Because you are asking to represent the people of your immediate electorate or perhaps the people of your state, and you're going to have to win a couple of 100,000 votes to be elected in the upper house, and in the lower house, you're looking at quite a few people in the state. Would you believe we've already run out of time, Michael? It's been a great thrill to have you on the show again, and one of the friends of the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program, and I look forward to hearing what happened at the big weekend down in Sydney, and I'd like to get you back on sooner rather than later to discuss that, because what we're seeing is the evolution of a party in the moment, and I'm sure there'll be many, many more people who wish to become members, explore, and possibly put their hand up to be counted as a candidate. Thanks again for being on the show, Michael.
And thank you, Jason. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I'd be more than delighted after sometime in the future to come back on and talk about our direction.
We've got to go. Thank you very much. Rick Munn up's next. You're listening to TNT Radio.